Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture, and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I am Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Carlin Bezic is a tremendously gifted songwriter, guitarist, singer, and multi-instrumentalist based in Toronto, Ontario. A touring and full-time member of bands like US Girls, Darlene Shrug, and Ice Cream, Bezic has been venturing out on her own in recent years with a solo project called Jane Inc., who released their debut record, Number One, in the spring of 2021. Jane Inc. has returned with a wonderful second album called Faster Than I Can Take, which arrives into this world on April 22nd, 2022, via Telephone Explosion Records. Carlin and I had another good talk for this show recently, this time about things like living with a comedian in Toronto, recovering from COVID-19, and loving funny television. Where the songs and sounds of Faster Than I Can Take may have come from. How much she misses people, even when they're strangers. Wanting to have children and dealing with pandemic grief, dehumanization and synthesized music. Wondering what the future might bring for performers of any stripe, future plans for Jane Inc., and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and friendly staff who will happily help you source special orders for hard-to-find titles, or just order things like Faster Than I Can Take by Jane Inc. You never know. You can learn more about them at blackbird.ca. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 681 of Creative Control, featuring the incredible and talented Carlin Bezek of Jane Inc., with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Carlin. How's it going?
Hi, Vish. It's going well.
Nice to see you. Where in the world are you today?
I am in Toronto in my basement.
Nice. Nice. Is that your... Do you own a home in Toronto? That's a nice looking basement.
Yeah. It's... Yeah. We're in, yeah, a basement here. I mean, we have a house above it as well.
Congratulations. Like, a house in Toronto. That's not... Not everybody's got that. That's great. I'm just happy for you. That's great.
Yeah. Well, my partner is in TV and film, so that's you know Mark, you've probably met Mark.
I have
Little.
Met Mark. Yes. Little, the comedian.
Yes
I know of Mark mostly. Do we know each other? Have we met? I feel badly. This happens to me sometimes. I'm like,
well, no, that's okay, because he was like, also, like, I was like, I feel like Vish maybe interviewed you or something, and he was like, I don't know, I feel like I know him, but I have no idea as well, so don't worry.
There's comedy. I'm involved to some small extent in Canadian comedy, in that I talk to people, and I go to I used to go to things when you could do that.
Right.
So maybe we've crossed paths, but very funny, as I recall. Congratulations on all of that. You got a house, you got a comedian partner, everything's going well for you.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, all that stuff is amazing. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to speak with you again. It's been a few years since you were last on the show with Ice Cream, I want to say. Was that the last time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you on, how did I do the Darlene Shrug interview? You weren't on that. It was...
I think that was just Max and Simone, maybe.
Yeah, it was Max and Simone in this weird studio thing I used to be able to use in Toronto. And honestly, the rest of you couldn't have fit in there. It was like a closet. So, no, that was right. Yeah, that was nice. So, anyway, yeah, it's nice to have you back on the show. I usually ask people for a little bit of a state of the union about the city they're in. What's your day like in Toronto so far? What's it shaping up to be?
Well, it started pretty late for me, so I haven't had much of a day so far. It's been eating breakfast and reading too much Twitter and hanging out, doing a bit of cleaning. That's pretty much it.
Isn't it like 2 in the afternoon there?
Yeah, well, I woke up at 11:30 p.m. today, so, you know, it was a long, leisurely breakfast. And
did you say 11:30? You said 11:30 p.m. Are you a vampire?
I mean, I'm sorry, no, a.m., no, the other one.
I have the same. For us, it's spring break for the children, and I realized on Monday, I'm like, why do I need to set the alarm? Like, I work from home at a job, and I should be up and at them, and I am. I get up whatever time my body's like, it's 7, you should be awake now. Even if I go to bed at 2, because I was watching, what was I watching last night? Mr. Show. I decided to just watch. I'm in a 90s mode. I don't know if you know that comedy. Do you ever see Mr. Show with Bob and David?
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of it, but there are a couple. That the one with the soldier falling into the shelf full of thimbles. I think about that a lot, actually.
Yeah, so I've been watching it. I'm reading Bob Odenkirk's memoir book thing. So I got in the zone. He whole section on Mr. Show. I'm like, you know, I'm going to, just to kill time at the end of the day, I watch comedy now. Do you have to watch comedy to lighten up these days? Or how are you keeping sane in this time?
Yeah. I like to watch comedy no matter what, but yeah, I actually have been watching The Simpsons a lot more. Like, I mean, The Simpsons, like, I grew up watching The Simpsons, so I feel like they're like, I'm like 50% Simpsons as like a human. But especially when I got COVID over Christmas.
Oh, no.
That was like a, like the comfort show. Simpsons is always the show that makes me feel like it's, yeah, that's the comfort show.
I grew up watching The Simpsons. I used to love The Simpsons. I do have not watched it regularly. My children have rediscovered The Simpsons, discovered The Simpsons. So there, I'm every once in a while rewatching it with them and the old seasons, and it's really good. So there's two things I forgot to ask you about. Well, I'm going to ask you about the COVID in a second because I haven't talked to anyone who's really had it, I don't think. Maybe I have. I can't remember. Mm. We don't have to get into it too much, but just out of curiosity, human curiosity, it's what everyone's talking about, right? So might as well ask you some questions. But what I forgot to ask you, or what I forgot to finish my thought about is, yeah, I just stopped setting the alarm. So I just wake up whenever, and I'm also behind schedule today because I made everyone breakfast sandwiches, and it was like 9:30, and normally everyone's out the door by 8:40. We're gone. We're done. Everyone's out of the house by like 8:10. And so very leisurely, like every day is Saturday. That's all I wanted to say about that, just to finish that thought. So I'm with you. Time doesn't matter right now, does it? Time doesn't matter. Do you have like a day job you have to get to?
Not right now, and the day jobs that I've been doing for like the past while are usually bartending or serving. So it's late anyways, right, which is why I'm kind of like always, I mean, even when I try my hardest, like the earliest I'm getting up is like 9:30. That's when I feel like, wow, I've really done it, is when I'm waking up at 9:30. But usually it's later than that. And also Mark is always doing, he's doing a lot of shows. So like he ends up kind of staying out late. We're late.
Night, you're bohemians. You're bohemian artists.
Yes.
And you just sleep whenever you want to sleep. No, it's true. I get it. Sorry. I don't mean to pry. I'm sorry you had COVID. What was the experience like? What can you tell us about it?
It was pretty chill. Like, I got it right before boosters were a thing. So I don't know if that would have made much of a difference. Like, it was just kind of a bad cold. I did lose my sense of smell, which was freaky, but it came back kind of like it basically lasted the full, I think at that time you were supposed to quarantine for 10 days and it kind of lasted like the full 10 days. And it did a thing where I was feeling sort of sick and then I started to feel better and then I started to feel worse for 2 days and then I felt, and then it was over. Okay. So
sense of, that would freak me out. What did you do to calm yourself? Just tell me, because if I get it and that happens to me, I'm gonna need something. I need some resources here.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I feel like when I actually got it and it never felt that bad, I felt less anxiety than I do when I'm worried about getting it, you know? Because it was like just so like definite and I was like, okay, there's nothing I can do now. It feels mild. I'm gonna get through this and then I'm gonna be like immune for a while, which I guess is cool, but I mean, there were definitely a few days where, like, I'd wake up and be like, can I not breathe? I feel like I can't breathe. But then I'd, like, you know, go for a walk. I'd be totally fine.
Panic.
I think it was I was always, it was just anxiety. Right.
Which I have. Yeah. So that's why I'm dreading having to deal with it if I have to deal with it. But, yeah, people are getting it multiple times, too. It's really, this long COVID stuff is really becoming front of mind now. People are really starting to be like, because you enter the risk pool for it. I don't want to freak you out any further. But, like, it's... Has it stopped you from doing anything? Like, you're a musician, you have to play shows. I've only been to one. I went to one outdoor show in 2021, and then I did go see Godspeed here indoors. But they put me and their guests in like a cordoned off area, and we all wore masks. Where the band was wearing masks, I was wearing masks. Anyway, but it makes me like, I actually, somebody who's very prominent is coming through here, and they reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to come to the show? I can put you on +4. +4? I've never been offered a +4. What does that even mean? For each of my personalities? I was like, what are you talking about? But then he's like, yeah, ticket sales are just everything's so slow that they're just trying to pack the rooms. Anyway, is it changed? Altered your perception of anything you're doing, or are you just like, well, I got it. I know what it's like now, so carry on. I'm just going to be normal again.
Yeah, I mean, it's like interesting that you're asking that because it's really been front of mind for me, partially because, like, you know, Mark wants to keep doing shows and is continuing to do shows where he has to be like maskless, and he's kind of feeling like we had it where, I mean, I think we're past the like 3 month period where like we're, they're like, people don't get it within 3 months. We're just past that, but it's like, we're still maybe technically in like a super immune window. So he's kind of like, you know, this is the time to be hanging out and doing stuff. And I'm still feeling very much like, well, it still feels uncertain. I'm supposed to DJ tonight. And I was like polling other friends who had COVID. I'm like, how do you feel? Like, is it, cause we're technically in like a wave in Toronto. I'm like, do you feel weird going out? Is it stupid to go out? I had it. I'm kind of in the best position to be going out. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Everyone's trying to rationalize stuff. That's what I'm hearing in what you're saying. And I'm not disparaging it. It's just, I don't know what it's, I'm just lucky vocationally. I miss shows. I think you know this about me, Carlin. I like to go to shows. I think you know that. I used to go to lots of shows and I just haven't done it. And I've, because of the circumstance, and somehow I've accepted that. But it is interesting. Everyone tries to rationalize doing the normal stuff when, from what I can tell, like, this is just because we can't behave in a way consistently because the politicians want us to stop behaving that way. It's just going to keep happening like this, the waves and the whatnot.
Yeah.
So
it's all bonkers. None of it makes sense. And I feel like my anxiety also gets triggered by that when you feel like it's like you're being lied to by
yes.
the people who are supposed to be taking care of you.
And they've stopped reporting on everything. Like, that to me is the ultimate. They don't want to tell us. And I've read that it's all politics, like literally, like there's elections coming up. So they've lifted everything thinking that's going to assuage one part of their voter base. But the one. Anyway, this is not the point of our call. I didn't mean to.
Well, I mean, it does relate to the album. I will say, like, all this talk about anxiety and stuff, it does, you know, so.
Well, and yeah, I'm blown away by the lyricism on it and on the record. Congratulations. And we're obviously going to talk about Jane Inc, because to me, this new record surprised me in relation to the previous one. It is, I think, more dynamic musically and stylistically. But that's just my opinion. That's just one man's opinion. I want to get your take on, for those who don't know, I want to find out a bit about the origin of this project, if you will, who's involved, if it's not just you. Also, yeah, like I say, the trajectory thus far to me already is very fascinating. You know, I was playing it the other day for my in the house, as I tend to do. I play music in the house that I want to listen to and I'm preparing for interviews for. And my wife's like, you're interviewing this person? Well, he's a little bit out of my comfort zone. Maybe I don't know what she's getting at there. It seemed like a low blow. Like, this isn't music you normally like or listen to or something. I don't know what she's getting. I'm like, what do you mean? And then she listened to it more and she's like, oh, okay, I see it now. I don't even know what that means about us. So I got to talk to my wife about that. I don't know what that means. I like lots of different things. But anyway, I've gone on and on. Let's start with Jane Inc. What is it exactly, Carlin? Who's involved beyond yourself? And where did it come from, so to speak? Because like I said, you were last on the show to talk about Ice Cream. I mentioned Darlene Shrug. You've been in other things. Where did Jane Inc. come from in your, you know, milieu of of projects and bands?
I guess it initially just came from years of having all these songs and demos that I had written that didn't feel like they were Ice Cream songs, but I still felt like they were interesting or good at art, and I wanted them to be out in the world. So I guess trying to create like a project that fit those things that weren't Ice Cream, you know? I mean, I guess it's more maybe also songs that are a bit more like personal or specific to just me, or songs that didn't fit the kind of like conceptual idea of Ice Cream. Not that there was really like a stated one, but kind of the vibe of Ice Cream, if that makes sense. And so Jane Inc. is basically just me, but I enlist other people to like be on the record. This new one on Faster Than I Can Take. I have Dorothea Poss doing backup vocals, and then I have Evan Cartwright doing any of the live drums. The program drums are me, but he's doing the like live percussion.
Yeah, so I saw actually for Long Winter TV this remarkable video you made. It's primarily you and Dorothea. I believe it's for the song 2-1. How do you say that song? I want to say 21.
I say 2-1-2-0 because that's what we say in the song, but
yeah,
you can really say whatever you want.
Well, it looks like a year, but if you listen to the song, it's not really, it doesn't come, you're not saying 2120 or 2120, however people say. You know, everyone says things differently now. Like when we were in the, were you born in the 19th, or in the 20th century, right?
I was, yes.
When you'd say like, hey, the year is 1997. You wouldn't say, it's 1997. Mm-hmm. Now everyone's like, I say 2022. People are like, it's 2022. That seems long. Sorry, this is a dumb, I just want to make sure, because you named a song 2120, but you're saying 2-1.
If I said the year 2120, I would say 2120. I wouldn't say 2120.
But am I crazy? Aren't people saying 2022? Like, that's how people talk, some of them.
Maybe because we're coming out of the 2000s still, or it feels like that, you know? 2000 seems so novel still, 22 years
later. I
guess
so. Yeah. Do you think people in the 20th century said, well, it's 1907? I guess they might have, but I would think everyone would have just said 1907.
They probably said like 1907.
1907. No one is like, it's 1907. What year is it? Like, no one's saying that. So I just feel like, anyway, my point is, what was my point? Yes, that video is great. It was one of the best things. So for those who don't know, Long Winter TV is a thing. I think people who listen to the show know I'm involved with the Long Winter Festival, and I do a long night talk show there, and they got me to host like this virtual version of Long Winter, and basically I was setting up recorded clips, and there's a really great one of Jane Inc. featuring Dorothea Poss doing the song. Is that video isolated, or is just part of the Long Winter TV thing?
As far as I know, just part of the Long Winter TV thing.
Okay. Yeah. So people can find that on YouTube. I think it's episode 3 of the 10th season of Long Winter TV. Maybe I'll hyperlink to it or something. Were you happy with that? How it turned out?
Yes. I mean, yes. I think they did a really, really good job filming it and editing it. But I felt like I had to defer to Dorothea, who said it was good and the performances were good, because I have a really hard time watching myself. And like that specific one, I like watched it and I started to like spiral a bit, being like, oh no, I gotta like get so much better at this, and I need to take singing lessons, and why did I do my hair like that? And, like, you know, like just like every little thing, I was just like, ah.
Well,
but I'm glad you said it was good. That also makes me feel better. I kind of also just tried to just like shut down that part of my brain. Was like, nope, people are saying it's good, don't think about it.
Oh, and that, I mean, it's the combination of the performance and the song. That song just gets in my head all the time. And I thought it was visually quite stunning. So I hope, don't be so hard on yourself. Let me just say that. Before we go too much further, though, Jane Inc. sounds like some sort of company. And I'm loath to ask people what their band names mean, but that seems, was that a reference to something? Where did that come from?
Ink is kind of a reference to like a lot of dance, you know, dancey kind of artists like Lip Sync and Love Ink. And, you know, it's like, I like how it conjures that kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm. And Jane is my middle name.
Oh, okay.
So I liked how it was like both my middle name, like a part of me, and then also like Jane Doe, like this sort of like blank kind of a name. And I guess the idea was like, I sometimes like to go into recording and writing thinking that I'm like my own little company. Like when I'm playing the bass, I'm like enlisting some other part of myself. When I'm like, you know, doing vocals, I'm enlisting some other part of myself.
Yeah.
It like helps as like kind of like a mind trick, but I also don't do that across every single recording. But that was kind of the like an initial idea, like
vaguely dehumanizing yourself somehow, but also there's a person involved. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's interesting that you say that, because I kind of feel like a lot of things I've made over like my adult life have kind of like dealt with that feeling, both like dehumanized but also like very humanized, and the tension between that and wanting to be humanized and feeling dehumanized, or wanting to feel dehumanized because you can't stand feeling like a human. You know what I mean?
I do know. Does that make sense? I do know what you mean, but can you expand upon that? Why do you think that's a recurring notion within you, that split, if you will?
I mean, if I'm being very honest, like I feel like I've spent a large part of my life not just really feeling like a full person because of social anxiety and like shame and weird like built up ideas about myself, I guess, like going into situations with other people sort of being very ready to be whatever I think they want me to be or need me to be, and not really being my full self.
Yeah.
Kind of like spending a lot of life feeling like I was like a person who was just like, you know, experiencing things but not really like pressing up against that experience. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense to me in terms of what you're saying now, but it also reminds me that you have a song on your new record called A Human Being. Is it called Human Being?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 And when I listen to what you're saying, it makes me assume that you're remembering or longing for the times when we could gather on one hand, but just to articulate that in such a way that you need other humans around you to feel human, that's fascinating to me in itself, because it just suggests a need for collective experience. Am I on the right track with that?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, that, I mean, that song was written as like an ode to an audience that I missed, or also an ode to just like crowds and like people I didn't know, and being anonymous. And also, like, leaning into the performative self, and especially, like, the performative, like, feminine self. So, like, you know, spending, like, a year in sweatpants at home with, like, a person who knows me really, really well, and kind of yearning for putting on an outfit and putting on makeup and being out amongst the world and kind of, like, leaning into that part of my identity. So there's that. And I also, but I think you're right. Like, it's, like, I think a lot about like performance in general and like why I want to do it and what am I getting out of it and why do I want to do it when also it like terrifies me, but then I do it anyways and it makes me feel like really good when I do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's connected to that feeling, that like lifelong feeling of not like fully feeling like a person or not knowing who I was like outside of what other people thought of me. Or
well, the expression that people use a lot these days is I feel seen, but that's usually on Twitter. Mm. They say I feel seen when someone captures something about the zeitgeist, if you will, that relates directly to them, and they say I feel seen. It's usually a joke.
Mm-hmm,
but you're in that song in particular, you talk about the voyeuristic aspect of being in a public space, but there's voyeurism. And being noticed is being seen, is like an acknowledgement of existence. So I think I can only assume this is a song that was written in the last couple of years. Given our, is that the case for most of these songs?
Yes. Yeah, I think all of them
fostered by isolation, pandemic, human confusion type things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other part of this that's fascinating to me in terms of the Jane Inc. trajectory and Ice Cream as well is that we established this the last time you were on the show. You're a shit hot guitar player and musician. So I was telling that to my wife the other day. She was like, she's really liking the record, by the way. I didn't mean to cast any aspersions. She liked it. She just was surprised that I would be talking to someone more, maybe it was the pop orientation of it. I do tend to talk to people who are a little scrappier, but I was like, well, if you listen to it, it's pretty Prince-like. And she's like, oh, yeah, right. And we talked about Prince the last time you were on, right? Prince is clearly an influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another person who has brought what is normally seen as a very human instrument, the electric guitar, into the world of synthesis and beats and electronics. And so, so as someone who's trying to assert their humanity, you have, in the last few years, I would say, with Ice Cream and at least the last Jane Inc. record, which was called Number One, I believe, Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
I'm just spitballing here. Sorry. I try not to have too many notes because I find them distracting. But my point is this. You have been engaged in sort of this cyborg musical existence. And I wonder if you're reacting to that as much because with this record, because there are the full-blown electronic musical expressions, but then you're getting into, I don't know, chamber folk or bossa nova. Like, I'm hearing different sort of styles we associate with guitar, particularly more organic, less synthesized sounds. And my question, if I have one after saying all these things, is is this purposeful, do you think, with this record to sort of find your humanity within all the synthesis you've been exploring?
That's a really interesting question.
Good, because I didn't know where I was going with all that. I have nothing. Sorry.
No, I think you're onto something. I'm picking up what you're throwing down.
Okay.
I feel like it was not purposeful necessarily. Not really like in that exact way or in those exact terms. Like I knew I wanted this record to be more vulnerable. And this record is also very hand in hand with like having gone through years of therapy, and also that therapy like kind of going on like hyperdrive in the pandemic, like because also the emotions felt bigger and I was like kind of dealing with anxiety that I feel like I dealt with the majority of my life, but like with less coping mechanisms in the pandemic. So like it's definitely, the record itself is a product of understanding myself better, knowing myself better, being more comfortable in myself, more confident in myself. So, I mean, I really, I'll always love the sort of like cold synthesis, like anything. I love the sound of drum machines. I am like very drawn to that kind of a vibe generally. Because also I feel like that mixed with like more human sounds or like human feelings and emotions, and it feels very just like a good reflection of like modern life to me, like feeling like a number or a cog, but also feeling like, you know, a human being, which we all are.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, I think I also have sometimes maybe like leaned on that style because I wasn't confident enough to just like play songs, you know, like I was like very interested in style and like piling things up on top of each other because I never felt like the songs were like, or I don't know, you know, I didn't want to be vulnerable, I guess. So I feel like it's like, I wasn't trying to like show humanness more. It was more, I was just like not less concerned about not showing it. Does that make sense?
Well, that's, but yes, it does make sense. But the paradox is that's a very human thing to do, to care and not care. I'm trying to figure out how to articulate that as well. Because I can hear you. There's a song called An Ordinary Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it reminds me of the artist Christine Fellows and her approach to music. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Christine.
So I'm not.
Christine's from Winnipeg, often collaborates with her husband, John K. Sampson, who was in the Weaker Thens and is a remarkable, remarkable artist, been going a long time. And she operates in the realm of what we would call sort of whatever, chamber pop, chamber folk, very, very inventive. Anyway, just for your reference, like this is a case where I didn't want to be like, clearly you love Christine Fellows, for you to be like, I don't know who that is. If you feel like it, look her up. I feel like you might find some kinship there. It's also to do with your singing style, which is, would you say on an Ordinary Thing, you're singing a little differently maybe than we've heard before?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So there's something about that idea of I need to tell you about an ordinary thing. I'm paraphrasing the lyrics. I actually have them up. I should be a better journalist and actually...
I mean, that's the gist. That's the basic gist.
I need to sing to you about an ordinary thing. That expression, it seems to me to be someone in the midst of a storm of chaos trying to find the calm, the center. I need to focus on an ordinary thing. And it is a outlier on the record as well, would you say, in a lot of ways?
Yeah, I think so.
Arrangement-wise, sonically, and your attack it is this sort of, it's not a come down because it's not even at the end of the record. It's in fact, I think it's right before 2120, which is arguably the most supercharged song on the record. So it's just this little moment of not ordinariness, but just calm. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what inspired that song and potentially even the sequence, because I found it fascinating to have that, as I say, right before what is like arguably a barn burner. What's going on? What inspired that song?
Well, the ordinary thing that I'm singing about is actually the desire to have children, because also when COVID-19 happened, I was, right before it happened, I was supposed to be on tour with US Girls, you know, and it was going to be like probably a couple years of just a lot of touring. And then COVID happened and all of that stopped. So I had my kind of like soft plan in my head was like, okay, for the next 2 years, I'm going to be touring a bunch. I'm, you know, sitting on this record, which was number one, and I'll like see what happens with it. But then all of that stopped. I had all of this time. And I was also like, oh, who knows how long this is going to be? Could be. At the time, I was like, could be a couple years. I mean, even though now we know it's like, there's no going back.
Yeah, it's forever. Yeah.
Yeah. So my initial feeling, because my body has definitely been like, you want to have a kid, you want to have a kid, even though like my mind is not usually there. So my initial feeling when the first lockdown happened was just like, let's do it, let's have a baby.
Right, right. Yeah, and, makes sense.
And yeah, we have not done that, partially because I feel really conflicted about it. So it feels, it's like, I feel like it's this thing that everyone, so many people do, we're put on this earth to do. Our bodies are like built to do it. But it feels very hard to do it with like confidence right now, especially.
Or any rationale.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you, I'll be frank with you, like when my wife and I first, I remember my wife before as we started to get serious, was like, hey, do you want to have children? This was well before we had children. I was like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, I'm an idiot. So I was like, yeah, I guess so. I guess that's what people do. Didn't think too much about it, right? And then we did it. As we were like planning to do it for real or whatever, I was like, by the way, though, like the planet is going to die and there's too many people. And this was in the year 2010 or something. 2010. Damn it, I did it. 2010. And I was like, do we really? And like everything sucks. I'm try to be optimistic, but and I think when you have children, part of what you're doing is expressing your love and optimism for your partner and the world. And that's at least one reason. I hope that didn't sound too selfish. I think it's the opposite. You feel like we want to share our thoughts and spirit about the world by creating a person who will carry that notion on into the world, and we will all share our love and blah, blah, blah. That's a little romanticized. It's not always like that. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I did have that conversation. Like, why the world is ending because of the resource drain. There's too many people. We are going to contribute to that. Do you really want to do this? And of course, the answer was yes. Twice. So we have the two of them and we are draining everyone's resources. The environment's collapsing. Now, as we're speaking, there's a pandemic. People suck. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. That's where we're at. We've learned that people are, some are good, but a lot of them aren't. And you got to deal with that every day. Sorry, that's where I was coming from with my doubts. Is any of this part of your doubts about whether or not to have kids?
Yeah, definitely climate change is a thing. I mean, I don't always like subscribe to the idea that like new humans are just like a burden on resources and stuff. Like,
sure,
you know, it's like people need to keep being born. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm kind of thinking it's like if I give birth to someone and then in like 20 years I'm like, sorry, like all of these animals have died.
Yeah.
And also you can't eat. Like, maybe you can't eat it, or, you know, we'll have to find somewhere that's not flooded for us to live. You know,
there
like
won't
that,
be bananas. Like, there's not going to be anything. Like, that's what they're saying now. And they're saying that now. They used to say 100 years. So you're like, okay, well, we'll have the best run we can. Now they're like 2030s, 2040s.
Yeah.
Because of the way things are accelerating. So.
And I think it's going to be even worse than the predictions they have now. You know, that's sort of what I'm thinking. Yeah. Although I'm a person who like you, has anxiety, assumes the worst. So, and then on top of that, I also, some of the feelings I was having that make me not want to do it is just like, I feel like it's like I'm just beginning to know myself, feel more confident in myself. Maybe I should just be like enjoying being myself.
We have to enjoy being
for a bit.
What is happening now, though, which I find weird, and I don't know if you can relate to this, it feels like our mild pessimism is being rewarded by the news cycle, by what's actually happening. So you walk around, I don't know about you, I don't think of you this way, Carlin, but I don't know you super well, but like there are parts of me that are a little misanthropic. I'm not antisocial, I like talking to people, but I'm also like, I just like to do my own thing sometimes and like not have to deal with everyone. But and like I say, I don't know. We're at a weird spot now because people are re-entering society. There seems to be more violence, more arguing, more fights, more brazen, like I'm going to get in someone's face about whether or not they're wearing a mask. Decorum is really sliding. And I'll say that from my vantage point, I've always suspected this was possible. So my mild pessimism is coming to life and I don't feel good about it. But at the same time, I have that little bit of like, I told you this was going to happen. And I don't like that about, I hate that about myself. Do you have any of that?
Yes and no. I don't know. Yes and no. I mean, I like to assume the worst or figure out like, I like to ruminate on the worst case scenarios
you,
in a lot
you,
of
you like to or you just do
no I mean well I mean I yeah I don't like to but I seem to not be able to stop so maybe I do like it I don't know I mean there is a part of yourself that does always like the terrible things that you do
or you know what I mean? I'm like, saying is the
you get used
the
to
terrible
it.
Thoughts I have or predictions I have okay as we're speaking you just said Toronto is in a wave, but is that official? Because as we're speaking yesterday, Quebec announced they're definitely in their sixth wave and the stuff is all happening across the country. What I'm saying is we're in a zone now where the people who say that's going to happen are gloating. Like when the numbers start to dip and all the protocols are taken away, I am probably part of a subset. I'm not too public about it. That says to my wife and whoever will listen, okay, but it's just going to go back up again because we've lifted all the protocols. We've been through this movie five times. Like, why would you think anything different? And then you always get someone who optimistically, I think, but maybe also because they own real estate or have a vested interest in, you know, economic drivers saying, oh, no, I think it's going to be fine. Of course, we can't wear masks forever. Like they say all that stuff, which is counter to what the scientists say. So I guess what I'm saying is I like to be right. But I'm not proud of it right now. Like I like the notion of like, well, the scientists seem to know what they're doing. I'm going to align with the experts, not just your feelings about what's going to. So, and I'm not happy about. I hate myself right now. I don't want to be this person, but I don't want to talk about it. And I know we're talking about it. Aren't you kind of just? Are you sick of talking about it? Because it just seems like it's predictable at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it feels like it's like, what do you say? Like it just. I have been trying to talk about it because I feel mostly just because I feel confused as to what to do in general. Like trying to weigh all the things, like I don't feel like I am necessarily at risk of getting sick again right at this very moment, but is what we're doing just living our lives until we get sick again? Because I don't want to get sick again.
That's an excellent way of putting it. I think that's what's happening.
We're in a wave and everything's open. We know that that's dumb and it's going to continue.
That's it. You're talking about the cognitive dissonance, that's what's making me angry. Yeah. And so is there anger on this record? Like I know there's self-examination. I know there's longing for the old, not, let me be careful. There's longing for the old ways of human connection. Not necessarily old ways of doing things. Is that a good way of capturing it?
Yeah, I would say maybe even more it's like grief or something.
Yeah,
like,
it's mourning.
Yeah.
So within mourning, there's always bitterness. Is there anger? Do you feel like there's a lot of anger on this record?
No. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say a lot. I think the last Ice Cream record was...
Fed Up?
And yeah, was an... I mean, the title would lead you to believe that it's a pretty angry record. And I think kind of like anger is an important spot to get to before you get to like a deeper understanding of things or something. Like,
yeah. And I know that in processing oneself in any kind of psychological sense, you uncover things about mm-hmm. why you are the way you are. This record, by what you're saying and what I'm hearing, it does feel like one of those exercises that is meant to, hopefully is going to lead to some sort of therapeutic release or understanding of yourself. Do you feel like you have that now that it's done?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was necessarily the record that did it. I mean, it was partially the record that did it, but it was also like a lot of other things that have happened over the past 2 years and therapy and talking to friends and stuff. But yeah.
Was it the pandemic pause that allowed you to take the time to do pursue the therapy and the thinking about what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, again, I was already like in therapy, but I think the pause, you know, I did more like leaps and bounds in therapy that I wouldn't have if I had just a bunch of stuff going on. And I think I also, like, even before the pandemic, was kind of like, oh, I'll just maybe take a break from therapy for a while just because I'll be traveling so much or something. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm trying to, I hear this a lot. Some people like myself have tried to maintain some sort of busyness during this time. Mm-hmm. Others have taken the time to just chill. And so mm-hmm. it feels like you're in, you seem like you've been, have you been beyond this? Have you been working with other people on their music or other projects?
It's been mostly this. There's been a little bit of Darlene stuff we've been doing actually. And then some like one-off sort of gigs that like aren't really like record related or anything, but sort of music related. That's really vague.
Like your session work ostensibly or?
Yeah. Or I was, you know, did some music for like this online thing. It's like a clothing store online that they needed.
Oh, you
like music for. So like just like stuff like that a little bit. But so I've been busy with music stuff, but I also haven't felt like I've been like overwhelmingly busy. It's been pretty chill, okay. You know?
Well, yeah, but it sounds like you had to do some work on yourself and you were able to do it because you weren't, you know, on a U.S. girls tour or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good. It's good. What I'm getting at is I know this all sucks and it's harrowing, but I feel like some of us have found the good in it. You seem like one of those people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, once in a while, remember like the things I was going to do if like COVID didn't happen, but not even that often. I mean, even when it actually did happen, I didn't, even though I was sad that that tour never happened, it was like force majeure. Like it was like, what's even the point in feeling sad about it when there's literally nothing anyone can do? And you know, if we like, you know, it's like people are dying. So it's like, it's kind of like there's bigger fish to fry. So yeah, I mean, I've been very thankful for a lot of the things that have come out of the pandemic for me personally and even like creatively and stuff. But yeah, I guess the thing that has just been hardest has just been kind of anxiety and trying to figure out what is just pure anxiety that's looking for something, like looking for a thing to focus on, and what is actually something you should be concerned about, which is very hard to do in this time, especially as things are opening up and like it, with no like logic behind it, you know?
Well, so there's the anxiety part. And I think what's fueling some stress now is what the children call FOMO. because everyone, as you have peers and my Instagram, my socials are filled with people attending shows, mm-hmm. going to gatherings, going to Lee's Palace. Like for me, moving from Ontario to Alberta, I knew I had psychologically been like, yeah, I'm going to miss a bunch of stuff. And I'm, you know, who knows, maybe I'll get to go every once in a while to Ontario to, I don't know, whenever I can, I'll just try to go. And then when everything got wiped out, I was actually like, I guess there's nothing to miss. No FOMO. There's nothing. Like, there's no, mm-hmm. no one can do anything. But now, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're like me, seeing people doing stuff, and my wife sees it too. Well, if everyone's at this basketball game on TV, and other people's families are gathering with their families, other families, we should be able to too. And I'm still of the mind, well, like, I don't think everything we're seeing is actually the way to go. So mm-hmm. I come across like a jerk that doesn't want to do anything. And I'm like, but I'm trying to be, again, I hate being right about this, but I think my general outlook is generally rewarded every 5 or 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So are you getting, do you have the FOMO?
I have the FOMO, but I've also been doing stuff. I mean, again, I like after I had it, it was kind of like, well, you know, the odds, like I can't get it for like another 3 months, they say. So, you know, I mean, we'll see. I guess I don't know for sure that I even had Omicron, but I mean, I'm like 95% sure we had Omicron, but
I'm not a doctor, but yeah, I know musicians who've had it a couple of times I know a musician friend who went down to New Orleans to make a record and got it twice during like the session time. And
wow.
So, but this was pre booster, double vaxxed at the time. And still, so yeah, it's, I don't know. I think by most accounts, avoiding it, wearing the mask, at least doing, I don't know. What would it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still pretty, like when I do go out, I still keep a mask on,
yeah.
You know, so I feel like I'm trying to have some balance,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to weigh the risks and be somewhat smart about it. But also it's like, I want to keep performing when I can, and I want Mark to keep performing when he can. So it's like, we just have to weigh that too. It's just kind of,
Yeah. It's yes. All right, I think we solved this.
Good. I'll call the science table. Yeah. I'll let them know.
Call the scientists and tell them we figured out what to do, which is do what you feel. Do what you feel makes sense, and we'll all be fine. So are there current plans to play shows as Jane Inc. Behind the release of this record?
I'm trying to plan some shows for May after the record is released at the end of April. And yeah, that's kind of a situation where I'm going into it with optimism, and then we'll see what makes sense when we get there. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but they're still in the planning stage. I should be hopefully announcing them pretty soon.
Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And mm-hmm. if people want to, there's a couple of things I want to ask, which is sort of other future plans, which can include, have you been writing and recording? And before I get to that, because you talked about the tour dates and people knowing stuff, maybe where can people go to learn more about Jane Inc.? Why don't we start that way so that people can, you know, be keep on top of your comings and goings?
Yeah. Well, you can follow me on social media. I think both my Twitter and my Instagram are at Jane Inc. Music. Very easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can check out the Telephone Explosion record socials or their website or my Bandcamp where you can pre-order the record. You know, if you Google Jane Inc., I think it's mostly me that comes up. I think there is a cosmetic company that maybe has the same name, but mostly me. Yeah.
It sounds like it could be like a tattoo place.
Yeah, true. Well, that would be, yeah, with a K.
Yeah. I'm just saying, people might think they're like, hey, can you draw this on me? And you'll be like, that's not what I do at all. Sorry. by the way, so I'll hyperlink things in the podcast description. So if you're listening out there, just click on the links and you'll go to everything that Carlin was just describing. I'll take care of that. So the other question, I guess, you mentioned potential tour dates. Have you been writing and recording at all since you finished this latest record?
I have. I kind of always am. And there were also a bunch of songs that I wrote that didn't make it onto that record. So if it makes sense, they might be on the next record. We'll see. A cover of an ABBA song maybe too that I might, I mean, if that most, I would put it on a record if that is possible. I don't even know if like we can get the,
you have to contact the publisher. I'm sure you could figure it out. Yeah. They'll be happy to do that. They get the money. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, I have been writing and recording. We'll see. It feels in this moment like another record still feels pretty far off at this point, but
well,
I don't know.
Based on this record, it seems to me that Jane Inc. could go anywhere. Again, I'm comparing it mostly to number one. Like, do you feel that way? I know you were like, Ink, Jane Ink, it's like a nod to electronic music, and obviously this record has those flourishes, but like I've said, there's a few instances where, I mean, the final song, which is called Pummeled Into Sand, I believe, I don't mean to pigeonhole you, but like 90s alt rock kind of, like, if that came on the FM radio's dial, you'd be like, oh yeah, this reminds me of whatever, those kinds of bands. So like, I think sonically, aesthetically, this to me indicates you could go anywhere. Do you feel that?
Yeah, and I think that actually might be why the next record feels a bit far off at this point, because I need to, I mean, with Faster Than I Can Take, the thread was like an emotional thread. All of the songs felt like they were coming from the same place, which, and they were all coming from the same time, which was, you know, early pandemic and dealing with everything that meant and dealing with the big emotions I had that were like created by that situation.
Yeah.
So I either need to zero in on the next emotional thread, or I need to zero in on like a stylistic thread. But as with Faster, everything I've recorded so far and all the sort of like songs I have that didn't make it onto that record are also all kind of stylistically different. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe my style will be stylistically wild.
I think all I'm saying is I think it could be. And what I'll also say is I think it hangs together really well. I mean, that's what I was getting at when, by just asking you, I don't know if I ever doubled down on asking you about the sequencing. It's not that interesting, but when you have varied tempos and tones, that can be tricky to sequence, but you've done a really, I think it's a really fantastic, it hangs together well as a record is all I'm saying.
Thanks. Well, I have to also shout out to Max Turnbull, because I asked him to do the sequencing for me, because it was also, I kind of had this desire to sequence the songs in like the order in which I wrote them, but that never really like sounded right. Or sometimes I would do that and then the songs would be like split up to like all the guitar songs and all the sort of dancier songs. And so I was like, I have to just outsource this because I can't figure out this riddle. So Max did it, and he did an amazing job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you have any kind of philosophical perspective on the title in terms of what that means to you, Faster Than I Can Take? I'm just curious.
Well, it was taken from the lyrics from the title track, Faster Than I Can Take. And that was one of the first songs I wrote in that whole set of songs. And it was written at the very beginning of the first lockdown, where I was both so thankful for the time that I was gifted, and then also filled with anxious energy and nervous energy, and really trying to figure out what was going to happen. And also kind of knowing that, I mean, it was springtime as well, so kind of knowing that growth and change was imminent, and feeling really inspired and excited by that. So I think the record itself is in a way about the pain of growth and change and the grief and the excitement associated with that. Mm. And so I think within the lens of the pandemic, that growth and change was just literally happening faster than I could take.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, ironically, or maybe it's not ironic, but in my memory, that song, unlike some of the others, is more of an evenly mid-tempo, I guess, compared to some of the others. It's not fast, is what I'm saying, like an idiot. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, like it's like a walkable tempo.
It's like just it's a way of, I get that the title track is meant to evoke, like the name is meant to evoke something, but then the pace of the song and the tone of the song, I think, almost flies in the face of it purposefully. Like, I'm going to handle, I know I can't take it, but I'm going to manage this by making something that isn't like supercharged and turbo fast, is where I'm coming from.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that really is what the song is about. It's trying to predict the future and feeling sort of terrified by it, but also, like, I mean, it was inspired by going on a lot of just long, kind of aimless walks at the beginning of the pandemic and seeing flowers start to bloom. And
yeah.
So, like, that kind of, that calm, that, like, being in the moment mixed with anxiety and fear of time running out, fear of time going too fast, fear of the future. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I want to say a few things. One, it's a beautiful record, and I appreciate your boldness and your ability and willingness, I guess, your candor in taking all of this stuff on for yourself. And I think speaking to what's going on around us, that's great. I mean, thank you. I love the record. And secondly, I want to say, on the one hand, I feel badly that we were so news-oriented today, if you will. But on the other side, I appreciate you occasionally saying, like, no, that is kind of on this record. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that this record is particularly a product of one person's experience during this pandemic, during this strange period in history. So I hope you're okay with what we did today.
Yeah, I totally am. And I appreciate all those nice things you said. And no, honestly, I mean, I think part of the anxiety that is in the record really has to do with living in a world that's like post-truth and like completely impossible to navigate in a way that feels like you're doing it with integrity. It just feels like no matter what, you're a part of the problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. We used to be able to not deplatform the people who said bizarre things, but at least be like, yeah, that person's a fringe. It just seems like those fringe people are all we hear about.
Yeah.
And they dominate and give us all anxiety.
Like, yeah.
For me, like sending my kids into the world, I'm like, who are they going to encounter? What are they going to hear? Mm-hmm. That's my wife's biggest thing, because they are all over the YouTube and the internet now, even as young people. But that's just the way it is. Like, you can't be like, in my day, we only watched television. Well, that's a gong show, too. So you're like, yeah, let them figure it out and ask us questions and we'll ask them questions. But then they go out into the world and you want them to be good people. And so in a sea of mostly good people, but... or in a sea of what we thought was mostly good people. I think that's it. We're starting to realize there's more of this thought and action that we thought was a fringe thing, and that's why it's anxiety-inducing. I wanted to wrap this up on a positive note, but I feel like I've got us mired in the... Yeah. Despair,
I mean,
again.
You know, I mean, for me, despite it all, I do think people are mostly good. I think people are just confused, and social media is, you know, completely... fucked us all.
The internet has not been what we thought it could be. Yes, I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, again, I want to end on a positive note, and I don't think that's going to happen with me talking. I think we should, if it's okay with you, I'd like to go out on a song from this record for people to hear. And
sure.
if you're okay with that, do you mind choosing that song for us and explaining why it came to mind?
Oh, gee, don't make me choose.
Like your children. These songs are like your children. And I get
exactly.
that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Which one do I want to choose? I mean, I kind of want to choose Faster Than I Can Take, because we were just talking about it. And I feel like, you know, that's one that people haven't talked to me much about. And I like it. So I want people to hear it.
Okay. Let's do it. Let's go on. This is the title track from the excellent new record by Jane Inc. It's called Faster Than I Can Take. And Carlin, like I say, I hope you enjoyed this. I did.
I did very much.
Good. I appreciate you, and I appreciate this time. And I wish you the best luck in the future, and I hope we talk soon.
Yeah, you too, Vish. Thanks so much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Very special thanks again to Carlin Bezek of Jane Inc. for appearing, you know, returning back, and she's back on the show. Remember when we talked about it already, the ice cream episode? I enjoyed that ice cream episode. It was nice to have Carlin back, this time to appear on the 681st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about, you're looking for it, you don't know where it is, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkhanna.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter, at vishcreative, or you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram, at vishkhanna. Also, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. $6 American or more grants you access to exclusive content, some of which is derived from episodes like this one. I went into a little bit of overtime with Carlin, just asking about a current obsession of hers. And so if you subscribe to the Patreon, if you like this conversation, there's just a little bit more with Carlin there at the Patreon there. But there's also lots of other stuff, too. Sometimes I grab stuff from my old archives there, my audio archives, the interviews I've done previous to this podcast. Anyway, if you're interested in any of that and supporting the show in a significant financial way, Patreon's the best bet because there's no other real... It's a little marginal ad income, I guess, but not much. So the real income... for making the show itself is from the Patreon. So if you like the show and want to support it, patreon.com/creativecontrol to make your flexible monthly donation. And if you would like a t-shirt in exchange for your generosity, message me on Patreon and I will get you one while supplies last. I have to say, they're moving out the door all of a sudden. I'm going to the post office more and more these days. I don't know what's gotten into you. I guess it's t-shirt weather. As we're speaking, the t-shirt weather is coming and now people want t-shirts. So feel free to message me there. Patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order things from their website, blackbird.ca. They're based in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta. Also, thanks to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on this program. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Carlin. I hope you enjoyed it and will consider following or subscribing to this podcast and telling your friends all about it and also Jane Inc. and picking up this record that Carlin has made. It's really wonderful. And for spreading the word about good stuff. Thank you so much for doing all those things. I will talk to you very soon. Be well. Be safe. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.